Welcome to Alpha Talk, where we discuss all things auto. From F&I to industry updates, Alpha Talk will keep you in the loop.
Welcome to episode 2 of Alpha Talk. We are so excited to be here today. We have an awesome guest prepared for us today. We've got Brian Steele, and if you haven't heard of him, he is an awesome guest for us to be having on the show. So just to give a little background onto Brian's history, he served as president, COO, GM in the auto industry, so definitely tied into auto. He has 22 years of being passionate about the automotive industry, so this isn't even just clock in, clock out for you, is it?
No.
No, the 22 years was definitely like audible.
Definitely say I'm an addict at this point.
And then he was also former president of a $70 million independent auto dealer group. And you just switched over to the franchise world, right?
Right.
Awesome. And then if you can't get enough of him after this podcast, you can definitely go check him out where he is the co-host for the Dealer Process Secrets podcast. And where's that streaming?
You can find it on all the major platforms, Spotify, Apple. Yep.
Perfect. We'll make sure to link that in the description of this episode. And then he sent me over his bio highlights, and I have to share this. I don't know if I was supposed to read it, but I'm going to. So he gave us a list of things he doesn't suck at. And so just for all of our listeners to know exactly what we're dealing with, he does not suck at marketing, finance, subprime lending, reinsurance, operations, the Macarena. Dang. Yeah. I wish we're not video recording.
Yeah,
this
it's
one.
Too bad. We'll have to have you on one time to actually prove
TikTok.
That.
We keep talking about we're going to get TikTok. Because. But no, that's great. And then sales training, used inventory, KPI. So you've got it all. We've got like the master here. That's awesome. So I'm super excited for what we're going to be discussing with you today, Brian.
Awesome. Yeah. And, you know, Brian, outside of having the, you know, same great name, we're really
excited.
We got
two Brians. Don't get confused.
The V squared today. Brian and I have known each other for a long time, actually met because I got suckered into a half marathon that I wasn't planning on. And so we started talking, and I don't even know. That's probably 10 years ago now.
Yeah. Half marathon's always a good time. I had a friend that came down and did a half marathon with me, and after that he was like, never again.
Yeah. Oh man,
this guy. Ooh. And we actually started talking a lot about work, and I was just sucking wind, just trying to like keep going, and you're out there talking about 10K reports and, you know, back end profit. So no, really excited to finally get you on the show. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of conversations, you know, at lunches. It seems like we're always going over just where the industry's going, best practices. So, you know, you've been a great influence on my career. Really excited to have you here. I know there's a million topics we could cover, and definitely looking forward to having you on again in the future. But with that, I think one of the things I would love to share with our audience is, I mean, you really have done it all at the dealership. Now, I didn't see if you had anything in there about washing cars, you know, any of the general porter stuff, but I assume that you're probably really good at anything that happens at a dealer level.
Oh, yeah. I've been at the dealership at 1 o'clock in the morning on an icy December night, you know, peeling stickers off the car to, make the, you know, put dreams in driveways, right?
The grind, the auto grind.
And you said you're an addict at this point, so it's not even a, you know, it's
He's
not
like,
even a job.
It was compulsive at that point. You're like, I had no choice in the matter. I was there.
I've always said, like, if you have, like, lost your passion for it, just get out with the customers, you know, like talk to them, because, you know, their enthusiasm, their excitement, taking delivery, you know, what you've done for them and how they feel about it is the thing that keeps you going.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the things I've always appreciated about you. It's, you know, having the focus on delivering the value to the customer, still getting towards those, you know, yeses and bringing in the, you know, revenue dollars to the dealership is obviously part of what keeps the machine running. But all that is focused around making sure the customer has a great experience and you're servicing the customer's needs. And with that being said, that's one of the things that I would love us to kind of focus on with this episode. I think that you have a fantastic background in really reading customers and understanding what it takes to get to that next level or what it takes to break down barriers. So, you know, my hope is, you know, maybe we can talk a little bit, use some of your experience and get some of the secret sauce on, you know, customer objections, how mm-hmm. you're handling your interview process. You know, I'd love to just have some insight on that and share that with our guests.
I'm really excited to talk about this because, again, coming from like a marketing perspective, one of my favorite things about marketing is understanding consumer mentality. So bringing two of my favorite things together, you know, the consumer marketing and now auto sales. Here we go.
And Jessica is looking for a new car. So if you can sell her a car on this podcast, we'll actually test how good you are.
There we go. Awesome. Yeah, I am literally your market right here.
Awesome. I love how you bring up value delivery. You know, value delivery is huge for me. Something that I go back to in my mind over and over again, which what I call business DNA, is like something like a mental exercise that I go through all the time. And I basically start out like, where are we broken or where could we be better? Mm-hmm. And, you know, number one is have a thing of value, right? Number two is tell people about it. You got to get the word out that you do this thing of value that the customer needs. And number three is a sales process to, you know, sell the customer once they come and then, you know, give them what they think that they're getting. Number four is value delivery, right? Did they get what they thought that they were going to get? And then number five is finance. Was it worth it? Like, you know, business finance. At the end of the day, was it worth it to get up and do all these things? Did it make it happen for you? And value delivery has always been huge for me. So I love that you bring that up.
Yeah, I'd love to understand a little bit more about, you know, how do you define that? How do you define value delivery personally?
Well, it's managing expectations a little bit because, you know, we can't always do everything for everyone, but setting the expectations right and then delivering on what you said you would deliver on. And then at the end of the day, do they feel like they got what you mm-hmm. said you were going to give them?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's one of the things that, you know, is key in our space. You know, we have great product out there. You know, the vehicles, we're actually outside of your home, this is the second largest purchase that a customer is going to ever purchase. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of emotional attachment to that purchase. And I think that, you know, our industry just in the past has gotten such a bad reputation for really trying to do everything they can to maximize that customer's payment versus mm-hmm. that value delivery, as you right. as you've said. So maybe, you have 22 years of experience. You've had you've seen the industry change a lot. I would love to understand how that's kind of changed over your career.
Yeah, it's been interesting. You know, back in the day, you know, in 99 when I got in, well, it predates this a little bit, but 99 was when I really like got deep into the industry. You know, back then we could just go to the auction, throw our hand in the air, bring it back to the dealership and mark it up $3,000-$4,000 and it didn't matter. And then as time's gone on, you know, and back then, you know, marketing was a lot easier because you could just get on the radio and as long as you had an ad budget and what I call a bullhorn, you could tell everybody where you were, what you did. And it was easy because, you know, there really was only a few channels that seemed to work. But then as we got into the, you know, 2000s, you know, the internet was blowing up. 2005, 2010, we called it the Great Confusion because all of a sudden radio stations were kind of losing their potency and we all had to pivot really quick and some did and some didn't. But, you know, marketing has been insanely confusing
well,
over the last
and
10
when
years.
You look at the buyer process has... It's a totally different thing. I mean, like what you were saying, back in like the 90s, you know, people didn't have access to the internet. And I mean, even if you had the internet, who had websites, right? Not very many people. And so, you know, their access to auto dealers and like stock and inventory was much more limited than what you can do now, where you can go shop for your car online statewide and people are much more willing to, you know, do more travel because they know what they really want is maybe, you know, a few towns over. Whereas, you know, back then when you didn't have that, you would just stay with what you know in your local hometown.
Yeah, I remember back then that, you know, car buying was like a Saturday, you know, visit, you know, five dealerships. And then like, you know, I grew up, you know, a little bit outside the metro area. So it was like we were going across county lines to go to where like all the dealers were. And we were driving down, you know, Main Street, USA, you know, visiting like 6 to 7 dealerships. Mm-hmm. And it really has changed. Now it's, you know, they call it a journey.
Yeah.
They say that it takes, you know, 3 to 6 months of, you know, awareness that you need something, awareness of, you know, people that are offering what you're looking for, and then desire, you know, you've decided it's something that you want, then you're researching and trying to figure out, you know, who has what you want, and, you know, what kind of payments those, you know, what your payments might look like, and doing a lot of research leading up to, and then you drill down to an intent in the marketing funnel. And then it's like, okay, I want to buy it. I see who has it. And buyers kind of take the sniper approach now, where it's like they've zeroed in on the car that they want,
yeah,
and they're going to visit 1.5 dealers,
right,
on average.
Yeah.
And so really you just kind of have that one shot to get them. And if they're there, it's because they've done a lot of homework.
They chose you
and believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'd love to, you know, I think that educated buyer, right? That's the thing that has changed. It's not just you're driving down the street and you happen to see the blow up mm-hmm. sign out front, yeah, you know, the gorilla.
Wavy arm man.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, maybe I would love to know, just from your background, you talk through having that one opportunity. Let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about how you're maximizing that opportunity.
Right.
I know that you talked about process. I'd love to know a little bit more about what that process looks like, and how your process might be, you know, maybe give a little bit of a hidden gem for our audience. Like, what does your process look like, and you know, what could our audience have that, you know, use to that advantage to maximize that deal when it comes through?
Yeah, so, you know, when we hit the sales process, it's, you know, the customer comes on the lot. They're very, you know, kind of protected. We kind of say that they come in a bubble, where they don't want your help, they don't need your help, and you get, you know, these green, you know, Greenpeace salespeople that come up to them, hey, can I help you? You know, just like at the grocery store, what do we say?
Yeah,
I'm just looking.
Yeah. I know, let me shop in peace.
So it's like, you know, avoid that question up front and just come out with, hey, I just wanted to welcome you to the lot. Has anybody been out to say hi? Oh, no.
Yeah.
You know, so you just avoid all that kind of initial objection that you could get. You know, and then if you get customers that are like, you know, we're just looking, you know, we don't want or need help. Usually I'll come back with something like, well, you know, I've got the keys. Am I invited?
Yeah.
I literally just had like this kind of experience. Like I said, we've been like poking around at car lots, and there's that frustration of having people come out and be like, oh, like, what are you looking at? I'm like, I don't know what I'm looking at yet. Like, let me look. And I went to another lot where no one said anything. It was like they were waiting for us to come to them, but I don't know why that aggravated me. I'm like, I'm here to, do you want my money? You should be working for it. But I also don't want to be pressured. So it's really, buyers are horrible. We're like, we don't know what we want.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an awkward process, but you know, they really do want and need your help, like you're talking mm-hmm. about. You know, they want to be served. They want to be given good information. They don't want to be pressured.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the approach and the initial interview are so important.
I love how you like phrase that though. It's more just like making yourself known, welcoming to them to the lot, but not launching right into your sales like shtick right off the bat.
Right. And two parts of the sales process that I think are probably, one part of the sales process that I think gets, you know, kind of glossed over, that's really an important and powerful part of the process, is the interview. And then usually the interview leads into the objection handling later, mm-hmm. right? What you told me. You told me that this was important to you, or you told me that you needed to do this or that.
Yeah.
So don't skip over the interview. Get, you know, get really hyper aware of what your customers' wants and needs mm-hmm. are, right? And then it's really good to separate what's a want and what is a need, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, drilling down on some of the stuff that could help with the process, you know, who was your last car financed through? You know, a question like that could open up, well, it was financed with, you know, subprime lender A through Z.
Right.
And then you might, you know, you could lead into, well, you know, if, you know, credit's a concern, or if, you know, you're needing to, you know, get some answers about payment, we can, you know, we can start with that, or whatever, you know, whatever need or desire you have to kind of, you know, rule out some things or get some clarity on where you'd be financially.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. You just mentioned that customer's coming on who's a sniper. They, you know, they know what they want, even if they say, they just don't want to be pressured into it, right?
Right.
So how are you providing value during that process when they walk on the lot? And I think, you know, we've all had those customers, right, that they want that, you know, diesel truck that they saw, but they want it for the Corolla price.
Right.
Yeah. I think that, you know, you can manage those expectations early on. Yep. And instead of going down a process where you're not, you know, you're telling them at the end, look, you're never going to get in this payment. Right. This is never going to happen for you based on, you know, these factors that I could have found out early on in the process.
And you can plant some little seeds like, you know, payments generally run between like $15 and $25 a month, depending on, you know, per $1,000, depending on your credit situation. And then maybe that kind of, I call it crockpot closing, where you just kind of plant little seeds along the way
yeah.
and then kind of let the customer soften up or warm up to those ideas.
Okay.
All right. Now it's close to lunchtime and all I can think about is crockpot. So when you were as, you know, president and CEO, you had, you know, I imagine in the franchise space is probably very different. I feel like there's a lot more training that goes into, you know, the sales process and the finance, you know, close. But in the independent space specifically, how are you making sure that your people were, you know, doing that interview every time? What was your process there?
That's a tough one because, you know, a lot of salespeople like to wing it.
Right. And, I don't know anything about that to any of our listeners.
A lot of salespeople just like to wing it. They like to, you know, kind of go easy and just kind of take the easy path. But mm-hmm. you really do need to, you know, I kind of would touch on, hey, you really need to kind of know the who, what, where, when, why, how
mm-hmm.
This, you know, transaction's going to go down. And so, you know, you need to ask pointed questions that seem a little, you know, inintrusive or, you know, that aren't getting too personal or too salesy, just asking questions about, you know, who's the decision maker so that you avoid, you know, getting 2 hours in and finding out that the wife or husband's not here or, you know, the person that's actually going to be driving it. But, you know, asking a lot of questions that relate to the decision maker, you know, trying to establish some rapport. I think it's always good to build what I call a loose tie, which is you're trying to find something in common with them,
yeah,
something
some
that you can relate to or talk about that may not be just the car.
Right. Yeah. How do you do that? I'm just like, you know, not to put you on the spot, but maybe think back to your last customer that you transacted with. What was that? What did that experience look like?
A lot of times, like, I'll ask questions about, you know, home life, home dynamics, how many kids they have, you know, where they live,
mm-hmm.
You know, where they work, maybe where they went to high school. And a lot of times you can key off of something in there that, oh, you have three kids and they, you know, play soccer. Oh, you know, I have that too. And
right.
Isn't that great? And, you know, doing all the fun stuff in and around that. And
yeah.
Just coming up with something that they can relate to you to where you're a human being or, you know, you're a friend or, you know, you're someone that they could go hang out with.
I feel like I feed the auto salesmen that work with me like the mother load because I'm a talker. I'll get in there. I'll be like, I've got 4 dogs, so I need a car for that, and we need to put our snowboards on the roof. I'm like telling them everything, and yeah, so I sure hope whatever salesperson I wander into next has like taken like some notes because I'm going in there with a gold mine for them, and they should appreciate it.
Well, and, I mean, Jessica, to that point, how often, you know, you just recently had an experience mm-hmm. At a dealership. When you're giving that information, I'm sure that you've had people that have not, they don't key off of it at all. And then you just kind of feel like, all right, now I'm just a transaction to you, right?
Exactly. There have been like some awkward, like, I mean, you know, some of it is just based off of sales, like personality, right? Like not every person's going to be the most charismatic salesperson. And so sometimes it's like this awkward, like I've told them everything like that kind of like, because I'm trying to improve my buyer experience, right? Like the more information I give them, the better suggestions they can give me, hopefully. And I've gotten some like weird, like I'll tell them, yeah, we've got like a bunch of dogs, so we need, you know, something accommodating. And then it's just kind of like, oh, cool. And, like, and then it's like, all right.
You're like, not a dog person, I guess.
You're going to do anything with that information? Like,
well,
I don't know.
You know, just to go to the sales side of it, you mm-hmm. know, I might not do anything with that information right now,
mm-hmm.
but by the time you hit the finance office, then I'm talking about paint and fabric, right?
Oh, yeah. 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 Great point.
That did happen. But that, but, you know. So maybe, I mean, not in that specific, like we worked with a few salespeople. So one of them did do that. Like they'd heard all this stuff and they were the more like charismatic of the two. And then the other one was like, sort of just like, oh, cool. And it was like, already.
You are really kind of being a detective a little bit, but you don't want it to feel like a cop thing. Like,
for sure.
You know, there used to be this old show called Columbo and a lot of salespeople talk about Columbo because he was kind of like this goofy detective that it's like, is this guy, you know, like, is he even like aware of what we're talking about? And he's, you know, taking notes.
But it's all this internal process. Yeah. Probably fair. Totally fair.
But it's, you know, it's good to make it a personable thing. Make it not, you know, we all like to buy, but we don't like to be sold.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just, you know, make it a good experience. Get to know your customer. A lot of times we talk about like a single serving friendship and you're emulating relationships. So you're, you know, if you meet a girl, maybe you're emulating a brother-sister relationship. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I think one of the best relationships that you can emulate is everybody's had a teacher that they looked up to, right? And if you can emulate like a teacher-student relationship, that's where you build trust, right? Because we start a conversation to, you know, form a relationship to where we can start to educate them. And we educate them to build trust because we can only move at the speed of trust. Like if they don't trust us, we're not going anywhere.
Right.
Yeah. I love that. I love that that comparison because I can think back to some of the better experiences I had with like certain salespeople, and I think I can totally see, like you were saying, that emulation of like almost a teacher student thing. Definitely having the trust there too. So that's very interesting.
I think a lot of salespeople go to the best friend.
Right.
It's like, oh, I'm your new best friend. And that can come off as a little cheesy. And, you know, what do best friends want, right? Best friends want the best deal, lowest price.
That's true. Right?
So it kind of puts you in
great mode. Me a deal.
Yeah. And, you know, not that we don't want to give great deals. And, you know, at the end of the day, we want our customers to feel like they got the deal. But I want them to feel that way because they were educated. Yeah.
That level of separation there. Yeah.
Well, and I think you mentioned it, you know, kind of coming full circle. About that transfer of value, right? It's hard to have that value transfer when you're in a like best friend relationship.
Right.
You know, that's the best friend that like, you know, your best friends are probably going to bail you out of jail if you need it. But it's usually like worst case scenario. But having that student teacher relationship, you're educating them on why it's important and then setting them up for success in the future. I mean, that's, you know, it's very poignant. I love that analogy.
Yeah. Well, and then it also kind of sets you up in that position where they feel like they should be taking advice from you because, you know, you are the knowledgeable source. I mean, you can, if it's your best friend, you'll call them on their BS all the time, right? Like, and so if you put yourself more on like that higher tier of like, I'm, you know, I'm friendly, I'm here to help you, but I also know what I'm talking about. So
you get the test drive where you're like a few miles away from the dealership and they're like, all right, come on, tell me the truth. I'm
making a good deal. Oh my goodness, yes.
Oh, it's well, you know, Brian, you have there's so much knowledge that we can't wait to glean from you, and you know, there's a lot of information I know you can share with us. One of the things that you brought up obviously was the value transfer, how important the interview was, you know, asking some of those questions and getting to know your customer. And I really love the key takeaway of you know that teacher-student relationship versus, you know, being the best friend.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to have you come on again, you know, and share some additional insights. Do you have any final thoughts that, you know, maybe you'd like to share with our listeners? Like I said, you've given us at least a few different tokens that I would personally take with me if I'm in the retail space.
You know, really focus on your interview. I mean, we've talked about it a lot, but, you know, really focus on your interview because that's where you're going to get the information. A lot of salespeople are looking for some magic bullet that's going to close the deal. It's the interview. It's, you know, how much you learn about the customer, how much you learn about their wants and needs, how much you learn about their hot button. And, you know, if a customer's walking out the door and you have nothing to say to them, that should be the ultimate feedback that your interview is kind of weak.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're walking out the door and you're like, hey, but what you told me, or, you know, as we discussed, you were saying that, you know, you needed to do this today or you needed to do that today. You know, you've got places to go to kind of pull them back and say, yeah, that's true. yeah, I needed to do this, I needed to do that. But I think there's two major spots in a sales process. One is the interview, and then two is, you know, the rebuttal, the overcoming objections.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And really, if you do the interview correctly and you don't skimp on that and you don't, you know, shortcut past it, you're going to get, one, you're going to build a lot of rapport, build a lot of trust, and then you're going to have things to discuss that, you know, really do solve some of their issues. Like, objection handling is not just firing a magic bullet to close the deal. It's to help them through their process, through their journey. Sometimes when I see customers walk out the door, I think, well, man, we didn't do a service at all, because now they're going to continue this monotonous process that they're not happy about.
Yeah.
And really, we could have served them better.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually, I love that there's kind of two parts, and, you know, segueing to our next episode, we'd love to have you back and really dive into the objection handling. I know that's an area where, at least for me personally, I know it's easy to kind of have that rapport and build that relationship. But when, you know, the rubber meets the road, and in, you know, automotive speak, I guess, since it's a podcast, I'll throw a pun in there. I think that that's really where the good salespeople and good finance people separate themselves, and how they handle those objections without sounding salesy and coming across like, all right, now I'm going to use all that information you just gave me against you. And every time you come at me, I'm going to use your words against you. I think that that's that adversarial relationship can happen a lot of times in that process. And I want to actually give a lot of time to that. So hopefully we can have you back for that.
For sure.
I volunteer already to do like the role play of the objection handling. I will become the most difficult customer that you.
Oh, man. Here it comes.
We'll do like different levels of easy, medium, difficult.
Jessica just has some aggression she has to get out from her past sales experience she's just had. We won't mention any names of where you went.
Right. No. How weird is it going to be next time I walk on the auto lot and I'm like, okay, I would like to establish a teacher-student relationship right off the bat.
And you need to build a lot of rapport.
Yeah, please get some rapport right off the bat, man.
If you don't ask me about my dogs, this is done. I'm just telling you.
I'm like the horrible parent that whips out a wallet and all the pictures roll out of it. You know? That's me with my dogs.
Awesome.
Well, Brian, I like other Brians. There's definitely so many other topics we can cover, and we can deep dive into this in the future, and I'm very excited for that. And just to wrap things up, thank you again for joining us for another episode of Alpha Talk. And as always, please leave us a review. That really helps us get out there and get discovered so that other people can make the most of the information we are sharing with you. Go follow us on Instagram. We're going to get a Facebook page built eventually. And
apparently TikTok as well.
There is a TikTok account, no content on it. So if you want to follow us on TikTok, you will be the first to know when we do start making content there. And so go follow us, leave us a review, and we will see you next time.
Alpha Talk is an Alpha Warranty Services production.